Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome into Bartholomew Town's continuing coverage of the impact of COVID-19 here in Rhode Island. I'm Bill Bartholomew. On this episode, a conversation with fellow Rhode Island-based podcaster Mary Larson.
Oh, thanks so much, Bill. Yeah, I've been checking out a lot of your stuff in general, but especially while this has all been going on. And I've got to say, you've been such a calm and secure voice throughout all of this. So I've been really enjoying all of the content that you've been popping out. And as a fellow podcaster, it's been really great to see a lot of other people tune into your podcast as a source of, one of the many sources, but as a great reliable source for the information nowadays.
Well, I appreciate that a lot. I know that there's been some, back and forth. You know, the reporter pool is kind of now in a situation where reporters are suggested they only ask a question every other day. So some independent media outlets have complained about that, and there's just been sort of this circus. And, you know, my whole thing is that I think the collection, at least from my experience growing up, I was obsessed with Channel 10 to the point where I had written to Art Lake and Frank Coletta when I was in like fourth grade, and they wrote me back with signed headshots. And, you know, I love that platform. Obviously that platform has changed a lot in the last few decades, but as far as the amount of creativity they can put into a newscast, I mean, that's no knock on them, but it's certainly changed. But
yeah,
but I've also always loved the Phoenix and, you know, the school, the Charahoe newspaper. So I feel like, you know, you've got to find a blend of traditional media outlets, new media outlets, independent voices, I guess, quote unquote, establishment voices to form an opinion. So to me, yeah, podcasts, social media influencers like Ben DeCastro, whoever it may be, that collection of questions mixed with your mainstream media creates an environment that I think is the most productive. So it's, I'm hoping that moving forward, it's not this indie versus big media thing in Rhode Island. It's just sort of like, hey, the questions are asked and presented to the audience, quote unquote, and it's their choice to decide who to trust, I guess.
That's it. Well, and you know, one of the biggest reasons that I love podcasting is I'm my own boss. So yeah. I know that I reached out to you particularly a couple of days earlier this week saying, you know, I've got these questions and these concerns with everything that's going on right now. How does the general public get those questions kind of brought to the surface?
Right. No question about it. And yeah, I think that's something I've tried to do as well, as be a listener to, obviously, I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, Bartholomew Town reaches the same audience as the Boston Globe. I mean, that's obviously not true. And any digital outlet that's, you know, kind of floating phony numbers and anything, I think that's absurd. You know, most people have television. That's where most people watch, and that's fine. But I think that some of the listeners in the independent and digital spectrums are maybe by and large more plugged in, and they have sometimes more specific questions. So it's just another way to blend the two versions of media, I suppose.
Definitely. And you're able to give your two cents, which I think sometimes in more of the traditional media, they have to be very careful about sharing their own opinions. And really it's often, you know, the facts or whatever is written by the producers. But what I love is when you get to have guests on, you know, on your podcast, they're able to share their two cents. And so are you. You're really able to blend that. So it's been fun as a person who loves watching the news. And I'm a huge junkie. Whenever we've had, you know, hurricanes or snowstorms, I'm sitting down, flipping through all the different channels, seeing how people are handling it. And so this is a very different situation, of course, but on the same sense, it's interesting to watch how everyone's, you know, reporting it differently.
Definitely. I was recruited by a couple of outlets before all this started, and sitting there and thinking, man, it would be cool to be salaried and so on and so forth. But I would always ask the question, And this is partially because I've had the opportunity to go on WPRO and Lively Experiment as well and start to kind of find a voice. But are you going to put a muzzle on me? And invariably, the answer is kind of, yeah, you're going to have to. If you're going to work underneath someone's banner, you can't just click go live on Facebook and start ranting. I mean, there is an advantage and a disadvantage. Not to call out, I think, you know, Channel 12 people have been kind of ripping them even in outside of the media for saying, why are you guys asking a zillion questions and so on and so forth? I think they ask great questions, but you got to also have questions that don't require that editor level of approval. And I think, again, that blend is where we're going to get the most information. So I appreciate what you do as well in terms of, it's challenging now because you mentioned you recorded a podcast last night. So how are you approaching, and we can get into some of the specifics that you reached out about before, earlier this week after, but I'm just curious, how are you approaching this period with Wicked Roadie, which is basically an event-oriented podcast in Rhode Island?
Yeah. So it's been rough. So I'm a mom of two. I've got a 4-year-old and a newly 7-year-old who I used to have these big chunks of time throughout the week where they would be at school and they would be playing with playmates and under the instruction of teachers. So it was great for their mental well-being, their emotional well-being. And now the three of us hang out every single day. My husband still is going to work every day. So during those school times would be when I would be working on my podcasting, you know, whether it's coming up with content, reaching out to guests, filling up the content calendar. And now I'm mom 24/7 with two very needy individuals who I adore with my entire being, but it's really hard to find those moments. And I will be straight up honest, like my kids right now, they're watching a movie. So to make it work, there's a lot more screen time than I used to do, but it's keeping all of our sanities. They need a break from me. I need a break from them. But my husband and I are still able to podcast 2 to 3 times a week. So in addition to Wicked Roadie, we have at Mary and Blake Media, we have a plethora of podcasts, a lot of which are based upon television shows and entertainment. And it has been such a blessing to have those in our lives because they've been a form of escapism. You know what I mean? Like all of us we're ingesting the news as much as we can, but sometimes it can be really overwhelming. It can bring them a lot of fear or anxiety. I know for myself, the first couple of weeks, I was having tons of anxiety so much that I wasn't sleeping.
Oh yeah. I actually had a full fledged panic attack, called the doctor. What's happening? You know, I can't, you know, what's happening right now. And, the answer was, hey, turn off the radio, turn off the screen, take a walk, take a breath. You know, this should be overwhelming for someone who's paying attention.
Yes, exactly. And that's it. It was those first couple of weeks where I felt, you know, it was a slow trickle of things coming true that sadly, you know, all the scientists and everyone is trying to warn us about. And I have a dear friend in Italy who was giving me her opinion. And she was saying, in 3 weeks, this is happening. In 2 weeks, this is happening. So I was an early prepper. And it was odd because one of our last podcast episodes of Wicked Roadie, which, as you said, it is a lifestyle entertainment events podcast. Our last episode that we recorded about events, you know, I was really basically saying, if this even happens, you know, if you can go out this weekend, because of course everything shut down. What was it? March 10th? It was on a Friday that everything kind of came to this dramatic halt. And we recorded on a Wednesday. And that was kind of our caveat was, you know, this is what's happening. It may or may not happen. All these events, you know, the St. Patrick's Day parade we were talking about that may or may not have happened. And so since then, you know, Wicked Roadie, myself, my co-host Ben DeCastro, and even my husband Blake have been on, and we have just talked about how different our life is. And it's hard for us to do an entertainment events podcast when exactly it's really hard. There are tons of, you know, online events that people are making happen, which is phenomenal. And I think as more of those continue to happen, as this is the normal for a little while, hopefully that's something we can highlight on Wicked Roadie. But we're one of the many businesses that have just had to pivot for a while.
Yeah, no question about it. And certainly being in the thick of the entertainment world, both Newport, including Newport, South County, and Providence, and seeing my performance schedule go from full time to zero, seeing the advertisers that I was working with, you know, just, I haven't even reached out to them. I would be embarrassed to write to, and maybe I should just say, hey, is there anything we can do? But I'd be embarrassed to say, hey, do you want to do another quarter of advertising on the podcast? It's like, the business is, you know, it's hanging on, you know, it's now down to the individual to just make it happen on a daily basis. And, but you've been able to do that. I think your diversification has a lot to do with your ability to be successful as well. You know?
Yes. Yeah. And so, as I told you, those more television-based podcasts that my husband and I do, it's been a form of escapism for people in general when you're watching a movie or reading a book or watching a television show. And what has been amazing is our worldwide audience. We've had more people tuning into our Facebook Live versions of our podcast, more people downloading, and actually more people, donating to our Patreon community, just because they know that times are tough and there are still so many people who their jobs are carrying on. And those people in particular are dealing with a lot more stress because they are out in the public every day, whether they're healthcare professionals, they're working at a grocery store, they're working at the Dunkin' Donuts. So a lot of people have been tuning into our podcast because it's not necessarily virus related. It's about a TV show that made them happy. And that has been a really interesting layer, is that bringing joy into people's lives, you know, talking about good things or talking about things that are completely different, is something that the general public really does need more of, you know, to keep a smile on their face in these dark times.
Couldn't agree more. And then again, luckily we have your content and that is a distraction, because it is essentially one story by and large in media for the most part, and not just in Rhode Island, but a lot of times, you know, if you're on Twitter, for example, during the governor's press conference, you'll see literally like 16 reporters tweet out the same thing in a row. And it's usually not good information, you know, good news. It's good information, but it's not good news. And you're just going, wow, where can I go to escape this for even just 30 minutes? And you know, you think about the Tiger King and how that sort of transfixed people and everything. I got involved in watching that, and you know,
did as well.
Yeah. Did you do a podcast on it?
No, my husband hasn't watched it, but it was one of those insomnia nights where I was just like, I need to get my mind off of everything that's going on. And that did the trick. And I binged it in 1.5 days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd figure someone would just be doing a Tiger King podcast, you know, interviewing Carol Baskin and, you know, the whole thing. But
not for me.
You're a veteran in when it comes to podcasting in Rhode Island, and we're on the ground floor. What is it? Have you seen the medium grow into a more credible, I guess, for lack of a better term, outlet? For, I guess, someone that is a traditional radio listener, is that conversion starting to happen where they're willing to either internally process and accept it as equal, you know, in terms of the reliability of the platform, but then also the usability of it? Do you sense that that's growing?
I don't sense it to be where I would want it to be by now. Yeah. I mean, as you said, I have been podcasting. I've been a person who's listened to podcasts, since the early 2000s. And we started podcasting in 2013, possibly 2014, and come a long way. We've gone to many, you know, podcasting conferences. We now have a full-fledged studio from what used to just be a little microphone in our dining room table. And of course, our listenership has grown. But what is interesting is that I think the general public is still slow to learn about how credible, as you said, podcasts can really be, and how niche things can be. If you are trying to find something that brings you joy, if maybe you're starting to go out and want to garden and you want to learn about gardening in the shade or gardening in a small city environment, there's probably a podcast about that with someone who is passionate about it. But when I look towards, you know, I've had experience, of course, both with Channel 10 and Channel 12. And when I think about, you know, my podcast experience in regards to more of the traditional media format, I don't think that people who either, you know, just the general public who watch television and may not listen to podcasts yet, or even people who work in that industry, fully grasp the power of podcasting, how important it can be, especially in times like this, where maybe people may not have great data usage. You know, that's one of the biggest things I tell people about podcasting, is that not everybody has unlimited Wi-Fi or unlimited data plans. And with podcasts, you know, it can download and then it doesn't deal with your data at all. It's just, it's there so they can listen to an hour long, you know, whatever kind of discussion people want to listen to, but then it goes off their phone. So I think that that's one of the biggest things, whether people need to go for a walk for their emotional well-being or their physical well-being. So it's still, it's at that weird spot where you still have to explain to a lot of people how to even download a podcast.
Right.
I do think that Crime Town, for example, when it hit and it had that big, big sign up on 95, that was a huge push to help people learn about podcasts. I also think that CNN, of course, has their podcast with Dr. Sanjay Gupta, and they talk about that left and right, talking about his podcast. And I think I've been sitting there as a podcaster saying, thank you for this major network coming out with a reliable podcast, someone who is informed in this field, but also just keep saying the word podcast. So maybe people who didn't think, oh, you can get news. And, you know, for you, for example, people can get, you know, really niche local news as long as they search Rhode Island in their podcast app. So I'm hoping that through this, it can even shed some more light and credibility on it.
What's it been like for you reaching both a local audience here in Rhode Island or Southern New England at large, and then also speaking to a national or global audience? That's something I'm trying to figure out how to pivot, because I want to be able to speak to that anonymous audience that's out there. I know whether it's via YouTube or whatever it is, but you know, when you're in Rhode Island, you have this sense that you're speaking to, you know, the million or so people here in the market and maybe the 100,000 people around the world that have a tie to it. Mm-hmm. And it's I don't know if it's easier or harder in that sense, but what has been the biggest difference for you, I guess, in terms of the two?
I found it a lot easier to have that global reach. I think that, you know, as a lifelong Rhode Islander myself, and you know, Rhode Islanders are frequently stuck in their ways. They turned to 10 their entire life. And they may not figure out how to do a podcast until 10 does a podcast, or, you know, whatever medium they've had. Maybe they've been print and they've always had the Providence Journal, and that is the one that they read and they believe it. So I think that Rhode Islanders, tried and true. I mean, you know, we all love our Allie's donuts. We all, you know, like our Iggy's, like we, the things that we love, and we're hard to try new things. Whereas I find people, when we've done more of these global reach podcasts, we have found people from all different places in the world who have been able to connect with just Mary Larson in Rhode Island. You know, it's been really, really interesting. And I have, one of the biggest things I tell people is you need to find your niche. It can't just be something really big and vague. We actually started off doing a parenting podcast. That's how we got into this. And as much as I enjoyed it, it wasn't really hyper-focused. And that's one of the things when you're doing a hyper-focused Rhode Island-based podcast, yes, your reach in regards to the amount of people is going to be smaller, but they're going to care about what you're talking about. And then when you're thinking about a more global thing, you know, we talk about, for example, a show called Outlander on Stars. Like, this is like just one particular show on a cable network. But because of that, we have this amazing audience who is starving for that kind of content, and they are able to find you. So it's been really neat. I love being on a podcast. I found when I was on television, being a co-host on The Road Show, I didn't always feel comfortable going out in public and just kind of being me. You know, I remember I was pregnant for half the year that I was on The Road Show. And I remember one day I just wanted to go, and I was craving cheese grits. And I remember going to the diner looking all disheveled, all a mess as pregnant. And I remember people being like, oh, there's Mary Larson, as I'm shoveling cheese grits ever so beautifully. Whereas with a podcast, it's frequently, you know, aside from when you go on Facebook Live, it's frequently really audio and it's very personable. You know, being a woman in the media, there's a lot of people who care a lot about what you see, what color outfit I was wearing. And they weren't particularly listening to what I had to say. And that is one of the greatest things about podcasting we talked about before. Like, you're your own boss. There is no muzzle. You can say your opinion. And because you're in somebody's earbuds, it's very intimate. And, you know, you can talk for a much longer amount of time than you would necessarily in a short video.
That's fascinating. I have never thought about that, but it makes perfect sense that, because there's no question, I've had Lindsay Idaluca on, and just my wife's experience as a performer, you know, there are different standards for male and female performers, whether in media, in the news sense, or in the entertainment sense, whatever it is, there's no question those standards are different. And people, somebody did an experiment, like an Australian male broadcaster literally wore the same tie every night, five nights in a row. And then his partner, you know, I think she wore the same dress. I think she alternated in the experiment at alternating nights, and she got ripped, you know, email after email. How can you, you know, whereas the guy, no one said anything. So it's,
yes.
Yeah. And podcasting, I guess radio to an extent, although radio is without question much more of a male dominated, especially talk radio. You know, here in Rhode Island, we have Tara Granahan. We've had some great mm-hmm. voices like Tessa Roy and Lexi Chris and Maya on WPRO in recent times. But for the most part, it's a male dominated field as well. Podcasting has finally leveled where it's a voice. If you're listening to Crime Junkie, it's Ashley Flowers, and you've got that one-on-one relationship. I have no idea what she looks like, how old she is. I couldn't care less.
Exactly.
It's an amazing experience. I agree.
Yeah, I do. I think it really, as you said, it's leveled the playing field in regards to the genders. And I'm so thankful for that. It doesn't matter what you're wearing, your age. It really is about what the content is that you're sharing, your take on it, how personable you are when it comes to the interviews. And people have to choose to hit subscribe. That's the difference. You know, with a radio, you might just keep it on, or it might be on what plays in your workplace, or television. It might just be what you just keep on because you keep that same channel on. But with podcasting, they make the choice to have that relationship with the podcast host.
Absolutely. And it's a special one. You know, no question about it. I feel like it's very similar to music in the sense that the people who you're serving, it is an intimate, for me anyway, as an independent artist, it was more like, all right, anyone who's with me is for the most part there because they want to be, you know, they haven't been exactly presented with, all right, if you listen to this guy, you're going to be given a badge of cool. Now you're cool. It's really not when it comes through certain channels. So it's a genuine audience, I guess.
Agreed. And during times like this, I'm so blessed and thankful for it. You know, I told you I was recording last night and we had people call in from Brazil. We had people call in from Japan and Canada and all over the US. And I am an extroverted person. I love to see people. I work from home, but I frequently would just go to the coffee shop because I miss interacting with the general public. I miss people. And I can't do that right now. And you get to have a really cool relationship. And you must find that with your listeners. You know, they get to know you well. And when they do write in, it is very heartfelt. There is a lot of backing. And even if they disagree with you, they have that relationship with you from listening to you for so long that it's not just out of left field.
Definitely. And I have people that write into me that totally disagree with my hot takes, or they'll bring up something I said on WPRO in November or something like that. And we'll get into it. But I almost like a respect or love level relationship there where it's not anonymous. It's not someone screaming at me. It's someone more busting my chops or vice versa. So it's an interesting world. All right. Zooming in now on, no pun intended, as we're here on Zoom.
I know.
You brought up an interesting point. I know Ben DeCastro raised this, your co-host on Wicked Roadie, during the Governor Raimondo's press conference a few days ago. Bike lane social distancing. Ben brought up the fact that there is significant increases in pedestrian to bike accidents mm-hmm. in the last few weeks. Obviously, we've got the parks closed here in Providence, and that's, you know, there are two sides to that coin. You know, I've kind of voiced my opinion that I think the parks should be open. At the same time, I've also voiced my opinion that I think the mayor's right to enact the policy because so many people were, when I was out there on a hike on the trail, you know, I had dogs running up and jumping. I mean, again, that normal times, all right, no problem, not anti-dog. But when you have this moment, it does require almost like a libertarian, independent sort of restraint by people. And it didn't seem like it was happening. So talk mm-hmm. about your experience on the bike paths and how that might be able to be dialed in without actually having to close down the paths is, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's been interesting. I live right on a bike path, and you know, as someone, I used to live in Providence. I used to love the Blackstone Boulevard. You know, going for walks is really important for my family, for me and my emotional health, and I just love to get outdoors, and it's important for everybody. The governor talks about it pretty much at every briefing that she wants us all going out for walks, and yet we've got these major public places shut down except the bike paths.
Right.
And what has been happening is during the day, during nice days, obviously people are going to want to go out. And if you have easy access to the bike path, you know, you might be going out for a little stroll. But I've been finding, particularly around the dinner time hour, around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, people are going out with their whole family. And it's been absolutely crazy because, of course, if you can imagine a bike path in your mind, you've got the two outer white lines and then the dotted yellow line. And I know for myself, if I'm just going out for a walk by myself, if I'm going to be walking by somebody, if I'm passing them or they're coming towards me, I go to my white line. I try to go as far away as I can from them on the bike path. And I find generally, if it's one person, they'll do the same. They'll go to their white line and I'll go to my white line. But when you're getting people who are, you know, a couple or maybe a family, and I've even seen several times what looks to be, you know, like mom friends who probably should not be going out for a walk together. They're supposed to not be, you know, going outside of their family, immediate family, but groups of people, and they walk straight across. So they are not only on that dotted yellow line, they're frequently on the other side of it, cutting into my lane, and they're chatting. I see this when people are riding bikes frequently. Well, they'll just ride each in their own individual lane and they'll barely move over. Maybe they'll go to the yellow line, but no matter what, it's not that 6 foot distance. And they seem oblivious because they're having that socialization aspect that we're probably all, you know, yearning for so much. And yet it's really unfair because there I am. I would love to be going for a walk with some of my neighbors, but I'm choosing not to. I'm choosing to do the right thing and keep my distance. So I've been noticing this a lot where there's particular times of day where it's just, it's mobbed. You can't turn around and not see, you know, 10 people. I've seen kids going out on bikes. I've seen fights on the bike path between, you know, teenagers just because they've got this pent up energy. And I'm sitting there saying, oh my God, like wrong on so many levels. And I'm afraid that if this continues, where it continues to get busier as the weather gets warmer and nicer and people know that the bike paths are available, that they're too going to have to be shut down. And that would be such another loss. You know, if people just understood to have your distance, I've had to say it to a few people, you know, I've gotten pretty upset where I've actually said to a couple of couples, you know, who are walking straight onto me as if they were playing chicken, you know, are you going to move? Am I going to move? And I've had to say, can you please go to the other side? Can you please keep your 6 foot distance? And they've given, you know, this kind of sassy look to me. And I wanted to say something, but I'm trying to be safe as well.
Sure. Yeah.
It's like, are you not watching the news? Like, are you oblivious to the fact that, you know, just because you're outside, you can't get, you know, within a foot of me the way you have been. So it's been it sounds menial, but when you think about how these other places have been closed because of these crowding issues, I don't know why people aren't taking the bike paths as seriously. And my fear is that they will be shut down eventually.
Yeah, that's a reasonable fear, and it would be a terrible result, obviously. You know, that's not what we're looking for here. Yeah, I find, you know, look, I'm not, some people have, you know, called me out because the other day I was out for a walk downtown and actually we walked the entire city. My wife and I, we did, you know, we're in Elmwood. So we started in Elmwood. We went through South Providence. We went all the way up Allen's Avenue into downtown. And for the most part, people were in this particularly vulnerable community. As we saw yesterday, the governor finally revealing that 45% of cases are Latino in origin. We saw people in mass, social distancing, lines at the grocery store, you know, giving a wave to someone as they move across the street or I move across the street, giving a salute, whatever it is, making something goofy once in a while to be somebody that would be, you know, there and you go, okay, this guy's not paying attention. But once we got downtown, I had some joggers coming right towards us, no mask, no nothing. And I put my hands up and went, oh, hold on a second here. The alternative for me was to jump into Waybossett Street, which, yes, it was kind of empty, but,
yes,
you know, so people ripped me for taking a photo of them and putting it out there. I was really trying to demonstrate that I found the more privileged part of Providence that's way less vulnerable, not taking this seriously, where the vulnerable part was taking it much more seriously. Regardless of that, I'm not trying to be a rat. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think you are either. It's not about that.
Yeah.
A snitch, no, or whatever. It's just about, hey, let's keep as much open as we can. It's really sad to me that Roger Williams Park is closed. It was a huge escape for me, as thousands of other people, I'm sure, in the course of a week. And the reason it's closed is because so many people were not respecting social distancing. So the message is, I think you're right to, you know, say things to people. And if someone wants to call you a rat or say, you know, you're bootlicker for the governor, all right, fine. You know what? On this one, I'll take it, because we're talking about medical advice. We're talking about scientific advice. This isn't a random rule in the lunchroom that you broke that you now have detention for. So I think you're right. I think that's what it's going to come down to, is people speaking up. And you can do it in a polite way. You can give a look, but how else can, without shutting it down, I guess, can we do it, you know, maintain these open spaces? Because you can't put you know, any kind of law enforcement out there on a long-term basis and hope that that's going to work out.
Exactly. And really, you see a lot of members of who are a bit older in age out on the bike paths, just trying to stay healthy, get that fresh air. And it just breaks my heart because I know who's walking just by me is probably going to do the same thing to them and get really way too close. So for me, what I've figured out is that the safest thing in regards to distance is still my neighborhood. I just get bored of walking in my neighborhood. So really, you know, it comes down to hopefully people just take it a bit more seriously. I've even thought about taking chalk and riding on the bike path when there's a string of nice days, you know, please keep 6 feet apart. But I haven't yet gotten to that point. So
that's we'll the next step. Mary Larson, ladies and gentlemen, what's the best way for people? Do you have a central website for all the work you're doing? Is there, or some way that people can kind of discover all your work at once?
Yeah. Mary and Blake Media, is our company where we house all of our podcasts and our blogs and everything. And you can simply go to maryandblake.com. It's my husband and I, we run all these different podcasts. I'm on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You just search Mary Larson, but really maryandblake.com is the best place to check out everything we're doing.
All right. Well, thanks for checking in. I look forward to doing a lot more. Hopefully we can talk about more fun things next time, you know?
Yes. Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Bill. And keep rocking with everything you're doing, my friend.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
For updates on COVID-19's impact here in Rhode Island, plus a back catalog of nearly 200 episodes featuring some of your favorite Rhode Island media personalities, artists, and politicos, head over to ripodcast.com or search Bartholomew Town on your favorite podcast app.